Hi, I'm Jeff, and I'm a therapist.
And I'm Tyler, and I'm a patient.
We're going to talk about trauma, healing, and everything. Everything is traumatic.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Thanks for tuning in to this podcast. We already had the intro play, so you know who everyone is.
Well, you just like sort of started it and ended it right there.
Well, I was trying
good morning,
to
good evening, and good night.
I was trying to catch all the and if they're listening to it in the morning, if they're listening to it in the afternoon, if
that's
they're listening
great
to it at night.
And if you just wanted to listen to the first minute or so, you can sign off now. But we promise, if you keep listening, there's going to be some useful banter and some maybe helpful things we talk about today.
That's right, because today we're going to talk about how traveling is
traumatic. So we're still getting to know each other, Tyler.
Mm.
As a young man, I was a terrible traveler.
Oh.
I got car sick a lot.
Really?
And so travel was always unpleasant in that way, because I was always afraid of getting car sick. So with my family, yes, but especially if I was like with a scout troop or with a friend, I got more nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at it back now. I think it was a lot of anxiety about getting sick. And so you would get sick. The idea of, you know, throwing up or having to stop or whatever was that anxiety. But so travel was sort of was traumatic for me growing up. I'm a much better traveler as an adult, but that's still in my brain. I don't want to get sick.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. You did not come across as a motion sickness, car sickness type of guy, Jeff. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things you don't know about me.
That's true. That's true. And this is one of them.
Yeah, and so car travel was different in the 70s.
Oh, that's true.
Where cars were definitely not quite as smooth or nice.
Mm-hmm.
The roads weren't quite as smooth or nice. And it was just a different era of travel. Now travel is so much more pleasant. Cars are so much more comfortable.
They're smoother.
Airplanes are not comfortable, but there are bathrooms on airplanes. And so it's just so much faster. And once you get over a lot of people are afraid to fly. So that's another traumatic thing about traveling.
You know, I was one of those people that was afraid to fly because I'm deathly afraid of heights. But after I like made the move to Oregon way back when I moved out there and took a one way, it really wasn't that bad. I think the least scariest part was actually being up in the air. I think the actual like just airplane culture was pretty terrible.
Yeah. And airplane is, it's to me, it's more like unpleasant because you're sort of stuck up in the air. You don't have much space.
Yeah.
But getting on the plane, getting through customs or whatever it is, TSA now, getting to the airport. Airports are just notoriously expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And unpleasant and uncomfortable. So being on the plane is the best part. To me, the takeoff and the landing is the best part
because
sort of like a roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm.
The middle part where you're sort of sitting there. But it's worth it when you're like, I get on a plane in Knoxville or wherever you are, and I'm in San Francisco or I'm in Vermont or whatever within, it seems like time travel to me. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is kind of crazy. And another thing that I noticed that airport companies do is like, at least for me, like when I had a layover in anytime I had a layover at the O'Hara in Chicago, my flight that I needed to catch would be like across the airport and I'd have like 30 minutes to get there. So it's literally like running to the other side.
Yeah. Yes. You get off gate one and your flight leaves from gate 148. So just 147 different places to go. Have you been through Atlanta Airport?
I have not been through Atlanta Airport. I only had a layover at the O'Hara, and then I had a layover in Texas when I came back to visit Tennessee when I had moved. And that one was weird too.
This brings up a whole nother topic that I didn't know. So you lived in Oregon?
I did. I lived in Oregon for about 7 months back in 2015.
Okay.
2015 is when I lived in Oregon. I lived in Clackamas, which was a county outside of Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was a great experience. I mean, it was a good experience. I say great. It's probably good. Good.
So this is like west. Is Oregon on the west coast?
Yeah, it's on the west coast, like right at the tippy top. Like near Washington State.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oregon seems to be a really amazing state. I don't know what your experience was, but it seems cool.
It was good. Like I said, I guess I sound doubtful because like the reason I moved back was for a lot of different reasons that I don't know if they were the best reasons, but I mean, I think it all worked out because I do like it here. I still like living in Tennessee. It actually looks similar to Tennessee, except I think maybe the trees are a bit thicker.
Okay.
There's just different.
You know,
go ahead.
The whole idea of living in another state or country is very romantic to me, especially when I was younger. The idea of I'll go live in England for 6 months, or I'll go live in LA for 6 months, or I'll live in. That seemed very romantic. Now it seems exhausting, but that's a neat thing to have that. Experience that culture for a while.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. Like, you can't pump your own gas there.
What?
Yeah, you can't pump your own gas in Oregon. An attendant.
Who pumps it?
An attendant.
It's a law that you can't pump your own gas?
You can't. It's like Oregon, New Jersey, and there's another state where you cannot pump your own gas. You have to, there has to be an attendant that pumps it for you.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like, it's weird.
Is there a reason for that? I mean, is there a...
Because people are dumb? I don't know.
They don't want you to blow up your car.
This is the three states where there are dumbasses that fucked around.
That's very interesting. So it's like the old days when they used to have this self-service or the... I don't know if you remember that. They used to have a self-service and a full-service gas lane.
I don't remember that, but I know what you're talking about.
That was sort of the end. I was alive for the end of that. It was, of course, 20 or 30 cents more a gallon for them to pump it. But then they would also like clean your windshield and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They would fix it. They'd do a quick little checkup for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they check your oil and, you know, that was the very end of that when I was a kid. And now it's all self-service, except in Oregon, apparently.
Right. And Jersey. New Jersey. And there's another state. I forgot which one, but there's only three states that have that law. It's weird. It's, I don't know. What else was interesting?
I'm fascinated with Oregon now.
You would love it.
That whole idea.
Like my first day when I got off the plane and like got picked up by my friends. Let's see. There was a homeless guy that was standing like outside who had a sign that said, "I'm Brad Pitt."
Was it Brad Pitt?
No. Cause I mean, he was African American. I mean, unless that's Brad Pitt in blackface, but I don't think it was.
Well, maybe he was researching a role.
That's true. That'd be the best way to do it. Let's
just say he's deep, deep undercover.
He's deep in character.
So is this a little town you lived in?
Clackamas, like I said, it wasn't like a small, I mean, I guess it was smaller than Portland. Portland was kind of like the big city, but living in Portland is hell of expensive. Living in Clackamas wasn't much cheaper, but it was a little more affordable. So when I went to downtown, first day being there, they had like the huge, there was the bicycle that has the huge wheel on front, little ones on the back. Do you know what type of bicycle I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There were people riding those that were all tie-dye colored. There was a lady that was dressed like Wonder Woman who was just grocery shopping.
This sounds like heaven on earth.
It's a very weird town. It's a very weird place.
You know, one of the places I've traveled, and it reminds me of your experience in Oregon, not for the Wonder Woman and the big old-timey bikes, but I've been to Vermont a couple of times. I have family that lives up there, and Vermont feels like a different country. It's not really got people in Wonder Woman costumes, but it's so quaint. They have like all these rules about there's no billboards, signs can only be in certain places, so you don't have all that distraction. And it feels like just a bunch of little towns strung together, like little townships, you know, at a town grocery store, and like a, it's just so beautiful and just so controlled compared to sort of what Tennessee is, where we just have billboards everywhere.
Yeah. Wow. So there's no billboards in Vermont?
No billboards. Mm-mm. It's not allowed.
Weird.
They have signs, but I mean, they're not like signs like we're used to. They're just like wooden signs. Everything is really controlled. Like McDonald's and stuff have to have everything has a certain code.
Right.
And it's to keep, I think, the natural beauty sort of open, you know, which is great because you just go there and you just get to see the world. You can see nature. Mm. And they have bigger cities, but they're not like Knoxville even size. I mean, they're like 30, 40,000, 50,000 people maybe.
Okay. And you know, I saw like the weirdest sign while I was on while I was traveling this past weekend what's the difference between communism and oppression? And it was
okay.
Speak up. And then there was a picture of Donald Duck and Goofy just like
is that like a riddle?
I don't know if it's a riddle. I don't know if it's like their attempt at a joke. It was like a, I think it was like a very conservative sign, but like, I just didn't understand why Donald and Goofy.
Duck and Goofy.
Were there. Yeah.
Speak up.
Like, I guess Donald makes sense. He served in the Navy. I guess he would be a little more conservative. I could see.
But Goofy
seems like he'd be pretty like liberal, right?
Yeah. Gosh. That's an odd sign. It's interesting to see the signs. The Tennessee, you've got your pretty standard signs, but every now and then you run into some wackadoodle stuff. A lot of religious imagery.
Oh, yeah, you got the
You got the
anti-porn signs here in Tennessee.
Oh, I haven't seen any of the anti-porn signs.
I think it's like going towards like Harriman or like Hartford and shit, or like Newport, okay. Tennessee. There's like an anti-porn one.
There's lots of anti-abortion signs, lots of signs that deal with, you know, some different types of religious faiths. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jesus is coming soon, you know, you're going to hell, kinds of things.
Jesus is coming soon. You're going to hell.
Jesus. Jesus is coming soon. You're going to hell. You just got back from a vacation, a travel.
Yeah.
I'm about to go on a vacation to travel to Pennsylvania. Oh. So something that is foreign to me as a Southerner, mainly as a Southerner, although I'm getting used to, is the toll roads. The toll roads are sort of a trip.
Yeah, I don't know if I've experienced a toll road or not.
So the toll road used to be a thing where you had to stop and pay, but almost all of them now, last time when we went to Pennsylvania, they're just, they just take a picture of your license plate. So either you've got an easy pass or they just mail you a bill.
Joe mentioned this on the camp and yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You used to have to keep change or whatever, and you'd go through this little world and throw your quarters or whatever. But now it's almost all, they just take a picture of your license wow. plate and they'll just send you a bill for it. It's like $3, $5, whatever. But one of the best parts of the toll road is the toll plaza. Uh-huh. So the toll plaza is sort of mid between the toll entrance and the exit. And it's like a gas station, like mall thing. So it's basically like a little bit of shopping, lots of restaurants and gas mm-hmm. plus bathrooms. And so it's just like, it's part of the, it's part of the toll road. You go through it. It's just there. You don't have to exit or anything. It's just there. Maybe you have to exit. I don't know. But it's very nice. It has everything you need.
So wait. All of this just sounds like such a fucking scam. So they take a picture of your license plate and send you a fucking bill. And then they have the nerve to offer a goddamn shopping mall, too.
See, it makes you angry. I understand. But you've never been to a toll plaza. It has everything. So it's got four or five different restaurants, usually okay. a Starbucks or a coffee okay. place, a little gift shop, which has like things about, well, like, so if you're in Pennsylvania, it's got Pennsylvania things, mm-hmm. you know, like sports teams whatsoever, and then gas. And so it's like, you don't have to like, you know how you get off an exit here? And like, sometimes they have the big things with the different stores in them, but you have to go to a gas station, you got to go to the Starbucks, you got to, it's just all in one place. Yeah. It's got everything you need. And so, and usually the road is very nice because it's taken care of by the toll. Mm-hmm. Okay. You don't have to go that, you can go around the toll roads. I think the whole idea is the toll roads, it's a little faster. Mm-hmm.
But still, that's just, so what, they think they're better than us because they could fucking control that highway that's a little bit fucking faster? Fuck them. I want their fucking house.
I know you are angry, but I promise you, if you experience a toll plaza, you're going to change your mind. You're going to say, Jeff was right. This is heaven on earth. This is like living in Oregon again.
You know, Jeff, you're probably right. I think I'm more upset just by like how they're doing the tolls now. I would much prefer change than just.
Yeah. But I mean, they don't charge. They just send you whatever it costs. It doesn't even, it's not even an extra bill. It just, I think, probably keeps them from having to hire toll people. As I think they like to be called, toll people.
No, they don't want to be called toll trolls.
Toll trolls. So yeah, suck. I mean, so I'll take some pictures of toll stuff. I'll take a picture of a toll plaza.
Yeah.
This next week and send it to you, and you're gonna say I was wrong, Jeff. I want to be with you right here.
Yeah, you know, I probably will, but like also like. I guess it's like I said, it's not the plaza that I'm upset with. I'm upset with them taking pictures and invading my privacy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we're being filmed right now. Probably there's somebody filming us.
Yeah. But at least like, it's kind of like ambiguous as to if I know that. Whereas they're not sending me a bill for recording me.
But here's the secret. I didn't know this last time. We were in a car to do this. You can, for a small fee, have basically an easy pass thing that they'll just program and put in your car. So it just pays the tolls for you. So the rental car company thinks about everything. And so they just, you know, then I don't get a bill or anything. It just charges the rental car company.
Okay. Well, that's a good idea at least, but still that's, I don't know. I think the plazas are great. I don't like this newfangled way of collecting tolls.
You know, Tennessee is talking about doing some toll kind of roads. I think that they are. Yeah.
It's going to piss me off too.
It would be great if like, if you were a Tennessee, if you lived in Tennessee, you did not pay tolls. You got a little chip or something.
Yeah.
Then they just put in your brain just be for people that are going through here. So we're taking the money from the carpetbaggers.
Yes. I know. Yeah. Like that kind of talk, I can see why they dumped that tea in the fucking Boston River. Like, I'm about to dump some fucking sweet tea in the Tennessee River if they put in those fucking road tolls. Taking pictures.
The toll thing has set off a anger that I have not ever seen in Tyler.
This is you're getting.
It's bringing something up from the depths.
You're getting like you're getting the weird like conspiracy theory, Tyler. It's like the government just needs to get out of my fucking business. I think that's what that's stemming from. It's just like, how dare the government take a picture of my license plate and send me a fucking bill for it. I ain't asked for that picture.
So I want to tell you a story that talks about traveling is dramatic. So we've been doing this trip to Pennsylvania for a couple of years now, and it's a way for get our family together, what's left. So my mom and my partner's mom, we take them, and then we meet my wife's sister and her husband. So they live in Vermont. So Pennsylvania's in between. So we just meet somewhere around Pennsylvania. It's just easy to do. So my partner's mother is a little bit wacky, and I hope she's not listening to the podcast. But if she is, I probably am going to be written out of the will. But
we'll believe
so last time she brought her sick cat. Mm-hmm. And her cat had to have treatments like water, I guess, injected under the skin because it couldn't absorb fluids.
Yeah, no.
So we've got this like subcutaneous, but it's like a needle. You have to inject it. So like we've got this like 400-year-old cat living in the van with us. We get a minivan. And I'm just thinking, you know, the cat's going to get out, the cat's going to die, the cat's going to poop. And so it seemed horrific. But in the end, it was okay. It ended up being okay. It just seemed like at the time, there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's how it is with cats. They're like taking time bombs. They're either going to throw up.
You're right, though. I mean, one time your cat's your friend, the next time it's tearing a hole in your face.
And
it's just, they're random.
Yeah, you're taking this weird furry frenemy with you on vacation.
Locking it in a van.
And it's meowing at you the whole time. Yeah, no, those.
Yeah, 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 a lot of yowling. So, do you have a traumatic travel story that you have experienced?
Let's see a traumatic one. There's one from my childhood that's a little darker that I could tell. I'm trying to think of like a recent one, like on this past trip, like it was actually pretty smooth for the most part. I found out that I could like take these little intermediate like speed naps while sitting up. And then,
all right.
And then I woke myself up by like snoring. Like it was like a quick, and then I'm like,
were you driving at this time?
No.
I found out I could drive and sleep at the same time.
No, I was, it would be unstoppable. No, I was passenger. I was a passenger prince. That's the male equivalent. Because have you heard the term passenger princess, Jeff?
No, I don't know what that means.
Passenger princess, it's typically referring to a female that sits in the front seat while the male partner, or, you know, whatever sex, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's usually a female. I guess it could be a male too. If you're a male and you want to be a passenger princess, that's fine. You could be a passenger prince. You could be a passenger from a non.
So is it just you're riding and not driving?
Yeah, you're kind of like, you know, like handling navigation and the music or podcasts you're listening to, snacks, you know. Kind of like
snacks are important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Prepar- a, preparation of good snacks for the road is very important.
And you know what I'm finding out, Jeff? Here in Tennessee, we don't have really good gas stations. We don't have like a Wawa's or a Sheetz. We have a Weigel's, which that's all I knew all my life. So, of course, I loved Weigel's. But after trying like Sheetz and Wawa, I don't know. I just don't
They're
know.
So much better.
They're so much better. You can get so much good hot food there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like you can get real food. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to Weigel's or what are those, you get like a hot dog, I guess, or a piece of pizza, but there's not real food.
Right.
And there's not a good selection of items. So when I was growing up, my father was a child of the Depression. And so we weren't really poor. We were probably lower middle class, but everything was cheap. So I remember we went to Disney World. We camped at Disney World because it was cheaper, and we took food into Disney World. So I'm watching kids eating like, you know, Mouse Pops and sucking juice out of Donald Duck's head and like all the stuff that you want to as a kid. And I'm eating like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich sitting on a bench, just like hating life. And just wishing I could have a Mouse Bar, you know, the little ice cream bar that has the Mickey Mouse ear. Mm-hmm. I just wanted one of those. So, but now when I go, I always splurge on it. I get whatever I want. I'm just like, I'm getting the stuff that I wanted when I was a kid.
Yeah. You know, that's something my dad would do too.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a certain generation of just, where people looked at money differently. If you were born earlier where money was
scarce,
there was fear. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of fear of anybody that was sort of older times.
Especially if you grow up poor, like when you're poor, especially when you don't have a lot of money, like, or if you go like how I kind of was, like I would feel like I was like somewhat middle class, but that was just due to like outside things. Like what my dad was doing outside of his business. And then to go from that to being like dirt poor.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they do like, it is different, like holding on to that money. And
also doing the cheap, you know, you get the cheap thing. You don't get the name brand. My dad would go from, he would get his coupons in the paper, and he would go from store to store to store to get, the coffee is 30 cents off here and the bread is 30. And to me, that's just like, I'm just going to buy it at one place. I don't care how much it costs. I'll just buy it.
Yeah.
But that was that whole idea of you had those 30 cents was important because you needed that money. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something that some of the older generations still, you see a lot in. And I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying it's just different.
Yeah. It's definitely like hoarding. They're almost like dragons.
Yeah. Yes. It's very much like a dragon. I'm hoarding it. Because I guess all that gold and jewelry must be very comfortable to lay atop.
Surely. Especially in the old folks' home.
Yes. No. Roll out the hospital bed. Bring in my doubloons. I'll lay on the doubloon.
Pile of useless junk I'm going to lay upon.
I'm going to lie on all the goodies that I have kept over the years.
No, that's a framed goodness. Picture of Bonanza signed by Marshall Matt Dillon. You can't throw that out.
I'm laying on top of that. Oh, yeah. My dad was a bit of a pack rat. He kept books and he kept things all over the place. And so the problem is when those people pass away, which he did, my mom is left to clean up the mess. And so she has spent years and years and years trying to declutter just the stuff. Because he would just go and he'd just say, I'll buy all these books. Mm-hmm. He would yard sales. I mean, he could not pass up a deal, even though he was thrifty. If he had a deal, it's like, we don't need these things, but we'll take them home.
Right.
So,
and I mean, like, especially like when you're traveling, you got to be a little frugal.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you got to count gas, you got to count snacks, you got to count whatever knick-knack things you find.
I can't imagine traveling with children. And so I God bless my mother and father for taking my brother and I around and taking care of us, because kids are just, you know, they're all in stuff and they don't know anything. And they're just like, hey, I'm going to walk down this alley. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no.
Yeah.
No, you know, not the alley in Philadelphia.
I don't know how my parents did it either. Cause they'd take me and my brother, and like, I'm sure it got easier as we got older.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I can remember going to like Disneyland a few times as a kid and Universal. And what was the last time we went? I can't remember the last time we went, but I had to have been like at least like 15, 14, 13.
Yeah.
I'd say 13 to 15, something like that.
You know, Disney is a evil corporation.
Oh, yeah.
But they do it right. Man, if you're going to sell out, you sell your soul. Disney takes care of you. They make you feel like you are valuable, even though they look at you as a number and a thing and a dollar sign.
Oh, yeah.
There is value to what they do, and they do it at the top level.
Well, at the end of the day, yeah, it's weird, yeah, because they do provide a service, but it's like, at what point do we justify the actions of the person providing the service of entertainment?
It's a good point.
You know, like it's kind of iffy, because like Disney is so fucking big. Like, how can you even take out Disney? There's not like a little hole like there is on the Death Star, right?
No, there's no. Disney is, I mean, now Disney was struggling when I was growing up. They were going between Walt Disney's original ideas and they were trying to find their space. Mm-hmm. But they have been a tank rolling over everything lately. I mean, they own Star Wars, they own Marvel, they own
Fox.
I mean, they ESPN, they own it all. So, I mean, it's just like a money printing machine. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a mix between how terrible can they be, and then can you go there and still have a good time?
Can you justify
it? I say yes. I say yes, you can have a good time. I say if you get your mouse bar and Donald and Mickey are dancing around, I say it's okay.
Hell, I went to Disneyland. You know what Donald asked me? What's the difference between communism and oppression?
And if you don't get the right answer, you're put into Disney jail.
He's sent to work with the child labor force.
You know, I went to Disney and they have these theme breakfasts where you can, like, basically every hotel has a breakfast, and then they have characters there. So they have Mickey and Minnie are at every single one of them. Right. But then they have different ones. So we did the one that was the one with Lilo and Stitch. Mm-hmm. And so I'm an adult man and I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, Stitch is over there. Look, it's Stitch. My brain knows that this is a person in a Stitch costume, but somewhere in there, I was able to become excited that Stitch was actually in the room with me.
Mm-hmm. Man.
So,
and Lilo and Stitch was such a great, was like one of the best ones. So like, I can understand.
It was amazing. Yeah. But it's the thing that Disney does in its all its perversity is it helps you become childlike again. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some value to that.
It helps you.
I'm not sure.
Oh, go ahead.
No, yeah, you're right though. I mean, where does that kind of making you feel like a child again offset the pure capitalistic just drive of a company that is just rolling over anything it wants to?
Yeah, I don't want to shit on like feeling like a kid again, because I like feeling like a kid again too. Like, I think it's just a balance of it. Cause like on the one hand, like I think nostalgia is a number one killer in culture. Mm. And we kind of touched on that on a previous episode, but it just really is. And I think like feeling like a kid again is that equivalent to nostalgia. Like Disney does a great job at providing nostalgia. I think now it's either A, getting really lazy with it, or B, we're just seeing through it more.
Yeah. And, you know, not to get super political here, but, you know, with these writers' strike that's going on right now, what the companies are doing to writers and probably actors and directors and producers too, is that they are finding ways to screw the person that actually does the work. Mm-hmm. So there's a writer that puts a product out there. There's an actor that puts a product out there, but they're trying to find ways to make it so they can pay them less. So that these writers, you know, we always think of movie stars, writers, that they're rich, mm-hmm. but most writers and actors are not rich. They're working job to job to get a certain thing, and they get paid a certain amount, and then that's it, right? And they're supposed to get residuals and this stuff, but the mm-hmm. companies are trying to figure out a way to screw them to the point where they will take shows off
yep.
of the air at a loss to them because they are billionaires and they can take the loss, so they don't have to pay residuals to the people that wrote or starred or directed or whatever.
Everyone's getting greedy.
Yeah. Did you hear what HBO Max did? They've very creatively changed their name to, are you ready for it? Max. And it's just a Max. It's a very sloppy design.
They took
all the writers, directors, everything. They put them into one category, mm-hmm. created by. So it doesn't say directed by so-and-so anymore. It doesn't say starring, written by. It says created by, and then it has a list of people.
Yeah, they're trying to make everyone a creator, not what their job is, even though that's what their contracts guarantee right. they and would it's, be credited it's, under.
Yes, and so basically it's a way to, I think, screw the writer, the director, whatever. Now, Max has said they're going to change that, but just the whole idea of, so, you know, I think of, like, I like to look up movies by a director, right? So it's yeah. like, oh, I like this movie by Francis Ford Coppola, I would like to see other movies he's made. But with that, there wasn't even a clickable. You couldn't click on it and say other movies for Francis Ford Coppola or other movies starring Tyler Broadway. Oh, you just had this selection of creators, which it seemed like a way to take away what people did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It does kind of strip them of what they did in a sense. I don't know if it was their attempt to like appear modern or stay modern in that sense. Cause like a lot of people just see everything now as like, instead of it being art, it's content. And instead of being an artist, you're a creator. And
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think
it's and it really is art. I mean, you and I have both directed or worked on films mm-hmm. at the local level. And it's hard work to get something to come together, and to belittle each person's role is sort of, that goes back to that. They're just becoming part of a machine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with this whole idea of AI creating content, it makes you realize what the studios really are. They're not really about creating art. They're about making money.
Exactly.
It's all about making money. And they don't care about the quality of the product. They care about making money. And so they will make whatever makes them money.
Well, it's like we talked about, I think we talked about it on a previous episode too. It's like, is it art or is it content? Because like,
yes.
From our perspective, we're going to see it as art because we're more on that side of creating it. We're not so much big on marketing it or selling it like a studio is, because they're investing the money and they need a return. You know, I am no way justifying, you know, that purging of art. I guess I'm just trying to like really understand like the viewpoint of them. And it's not justified to just cut corners and not pay artists for content for art that you purchased to put on your streaming service. And that was another thing about streaming services is that they weren't getting their residuals. So that's been fucking them too for like probably the past 10 years that streaming services have been around.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's very like I understand the strike completely, and like I think they're gonna get their demands met because I don't know if you've read a script from an AI, but it's not very good.
Yeah, I feel like they again, some people will say, oh, the greedy writers. But again, we already said most writers are not making bank; they're just surviving. You know, they may have a decent life, but they're not making major money. But yeah, I feel like that it comes up with ideas. And speaking of ideas, you and I have an idea for a project that is sort of, we can touch on it, but we can't give out all the information because of all the planning and the NDAs that are involved in the talent. But we're working on a pretty, pretty cool project. It's in, we're in the pre-production phase.
I think so, or development.
Yeah. And it is going to involve a travel, a vacation of sorts, a travel experience. And it's going to be a place that many of you probably have not heard of. I had not.
I had not heard of this place until coming upon it. So I'm very excited to see where this goes and see what we can get out of it. But it does involve traveling.
It's going to be involved in traveling, and basically Tyler and I sort of spin on a weekend away in a special place that we had never heard of. And, you know, we're going to drop some secrets and some hints as we go along, but hopefully it'll be worth the wait.
And we even talked about possibly shooting recording an episode of the podcast while we're there too.
Yes. I think that's how the idea started. We were like, let's go somewhere and shoot a thing. And you're like, hey, what about this place? And I'm like, I've never heard of this place. And I think an idea was born. It just happened.
And then the title came.
The title came. Yes. And the title, and sometimes the title just makes the movie. And I feel like we've created a title
that really captures what we're going for.
Yeah. Another thing we have not mentioned, but I think we're going to try to sort of make this a part of one of our fundraising activities, is there's a cardigan sweater that Tyler really wants. And it's a badass sweater. Really is. And so we may have it. If by the time this airs, it's possibly he'll already have it. But we also are going to try to raise some money so that he can get this cardigan that he could maybe wear on our little film expo thing we're going to do
in
the future.
If we get it in time.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the first thing we should do.
I think we need to figure out how to get you the cardigan.
Yeah. Think of, we'll brainstorm on that. We'll brainstorm on
that. Definitely. So, I mean, if, you know, again, we've sort of been moving around things, but yeah, I think traveling is some of the worst and the best. It's something that we do with our family and our friends. It's stressful, but I really like the idea of creating experiences instead of accumulating things. I think that there are a lot of people that have moved towards that mindset of I'm going to do things instead of get things and keep things. And so creating experiences to me is valuable.
You know, I can't help but to agree. I think this has kind of reached its logical conclusion. I think those were some great final thoughts. Jeff, do you have anything else to add about traveling? Any advice?
Just happy travels and safe travels for anybody that's going on travels anytime soon. And just keep an eye out for us on social media and different things where we may put up some hints about different things. We probably will post a picture of the sweater that we're trying to get Tyler. I don't know if we can make that happen, but we can put it up somewhere.
Yeah, we can put that up. And if you need help finding us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at everything is traumatic all underscore. And come give us a like and listen to the podcast.
Yeah, let us know what you think if you're listening and you have some comments, good or bad. We're big boys. We can handle criticism.
You can say it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll listen to your comments. So, yeah, just hit us up.
Just hit us up. And as always, this has been Everything is Traumatic. I am Tyler.
And I'm Jeff.
And as always, take care of yourself. Play us out.